It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. According to our next guest, internet addiction is a problem more pervasive than alcoholism in this country. The problem is that unlike drinking alcohol, internet use is sometimes unavoidable for many tasks, such as paying medical bills for this very treatment. The good news is treatment is available, but the question is, when do you know that you need it? I'm joined now by phone by Kimberly Young, a doctor with a newly opened voluntary 10-day program at the Behavioral Health Services at Bradford Regional Medical Center in central Pennsylvania. Dr. Young, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you for having me.
And if you have a comment or question for our guest, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is ESSPGH@WESA.FM. And you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Do you know someone that you think has an internet addiction? Possibly yourself. And if so, in what ways does this addiction manifest itself? Dr. Young, I was interested in finding out exactly when you first became aware that there was such a thing as internet addiction.
Back in around 1994, 95, a friend of mine's husband got addicted to AOL chat rooms. It was when they were sending out those free disks, mm-hmm. and people were popping them into the computer, and it still cost $2.95 an hour, and he was spending maybe 50, 60, 70 hours a week chatting, and as it turns out, with other women. So it made me wonder, could people get addicted to the internet in the same way we talk about drugs, alcohol, food, gambling? So I posted a small survey online taking the same clinical criteria as pathological gambling, seeing that as an impulse control disorder that didn't involve an intoxicant. So it's very parallel to internet. And then I just substituted the word internet for gambling. And like the next morning, I had something like 40-some emails from people. And again, back then, maybe I had 2 emails a month. So this was really startling. And the stories they were starting to share about job loss, about losing a marriage because of their internet use, students that were adapting to the technology that were also having a very significant problem with being able to control their use.
And one of the questions I had for you was, what is the profile of someone who has an internet addiction? And it sounds like you've just described that. Is there anything else that we need to know that is the sign of someone who has an internet addiction?
Well, one of the things, I just completed a large survey study, about 1,000 people, and we are finding that people that have poor coping skills, more problems with social anxiety, more problems in general with psychiatric conditions, say depression or alcoholism, or anxiety in general, are having more of a problem with internet addiction. So we're starting to see that there's certain vulnerabilities that people have that, again, we're not talking about people that spend too long on their iPhone and really using it as a functional tool, like to make airline reservations or hotel reservations. We're talking about people that might get involved with gambling online, gaming online, pornography online, and they're doing it to a point of excess that it's causing a very significant problem in their lives.
So you've talked about the problem and you've described the kind of people who have it or are susceptible to it. So then what kind of a program is this that you have? How does it work and how was it developed?
Well, it was developed. I live in Bradford, so I work near the hospital. I also am a professor at St. Bonaventure University. And so what happened was through my research and through just talking with a lot of the medical community at the hospital, I think we started trying to build the program and saying, what is it that we can effectively achieve in a certain amount of time? They are a dual diagnosis program. So what happens is somebody has to have an addiction and a psychiatric illness condition of some kind, could be depression, obsessive compulsive disorder, and so forth. And, we really have the internet tracked, if you will, where we started seeing that our clients were already addicted to the internet. Once you start screening for this, I would gather at most major hospitals, they're going to start finding people are on their cell phones and their computer technology much longer. But right now, we don't use that as a standard criteria for screening. Nobody's really talking about it. So what happened was we started seeing a lot of people already having this problem, and we just formalized the program. Every patient would go through a 72-hour detox, and that's fairly consistent with what you'd see with other addiction rehab programs, 72 hours, just to have that person sort of get with through that process not having any technology.
So they come in, and this is, again, a voluntary program, but for the first 72 hours that they are at the hospital, this is inpatient, so they can't leave, right?
Correct. It's a locked ward. I mean, you know, there's a lot of structure and rules sort of around their use of anything. So that helps to control it, if you will. And then what happens is that then they're taught, you know, they're slowly reintroduced to technology. It's a very behavioral medicine type of approach where they're relearning how to use computers, very much like a food addiction. You're not talking about somebody that is, going to abstain from food as the answer. You're not going to talk about that with the internet as well. Again, there's functional use. They might have to abstain from gaming, for example. We see a lot of gamers and people that might spend 12 hours a day gaming, and all of a sudden they can't game anymore.
So how do you get people? Yeah, and obviously this is a problem for some people. But how do you, once somebody goes back out in the real world, they leave the hospital, they're still obviously going to need to use a computer for work and for other tasks, to go on the internet and do things, and yet there are going to be things that they need to avoid. How do you train somebody when that temptation is right there?
Wouldn't that be like putting
a bottle of whiskey next to an alcoholic and saying, now don't you drink that?
No, again, it's not the analogy because we're not looking at an abstinence model. We're looking at kind of a food addiction model. So treatment really is about learning to control and moderate your use. Some of the tools that we use are certainly computer software, monitoring, firewalls to block certain applications. So, again, taking gaming as an example, they come to our clinic, they bring their own laptop or what they're going to use when they leave. We certainly can load them up with certain controls on their software, and that's how they learn as well. So this is the only tool that they can use for the internet. So it's very specific. You're trying to eliminate a lot of temptations, and it's really about kind of going on a digital diet where they're trying to learn healthier ways of using the technology. Can they still use it to maybe take classes at school, check their email, make an airline reservation? Certainly, but they can't game. Gaming is just, that's the abstinence part of it. So you have to take a step back. It's not just the technology, it's what they're doing with the technology. It's sort of like, don't choose that bag of donuts to eat or Doritos to eat or something, but make healthier choices in your food selection. It's very much like that with the internet as well.
We are talking with Dr. Kimberly Young, a doctor with a newly opened voluntary 10-day program at the Behavioral Health Services at Bradford Regional Medical Center in central Pennsylvania that treats people with internet addiction. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. And we have Chris in Moon with a comment. Chris, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello, Dr. Young. Congratulations on your center. I must say I disagree entirely. I think that, the issue is what is healthy as determined by whom. I mean, for example, I'm a person who would probably wipe out all religion on the internet, but on the other hand, a lot of people find it comforting, and so I have nothing to say about it. I would also point out that, for example, some people are just really shy. I mean, Match.com has, in fact, resulted in a lot of people meeting somebody when otherwise they'd be sitting in a cafe, staring at their coffee and talking to no one. How would you respond to that?
Well, yeah, I think you make an excellent point, and I would agree with you. I mean, there's a lot of functional use. And again, what you're describing, going on a dating site, for example, or being able to share religious viewpoints, that's perfectly healthy behavior. As long as you don't become addicted to doing that it causes a problem in your life. I mean, most addiction, it's sort of like, what's the difference between a social drinker, somebody who enjoys consuming alcohol, and somebody who's an alcoholic? It's not even about the volume of time. It's really about what are the problems it's causing. So you have to really look at it from a pragmatic perspective, saying if that behavior is causing a problem for you and other people are, if you're starting to lie or hide your use, if others are complaining about your use, if you're using it as a form of escape, perhaps, from your life, where it's troubling, you get fired from a job, your wife walks out on you, then there might be a problem, obviously. So that's really what we're looking at in terms of, I think, the definition of it, which is what you're talking about.
And the effects of this can be pretty extreme. For example, we understand that in Korea, for example, in South Korea, there's a huge problem with internet addiction, where people visit internet cafes and stay connected for days at a time. And in some cases, this leads to deaths from exhaustion and deep vein thrombosis. So this, I realize that those might be extreme cases, but is this a worldwide problem, in your opinion, Dr. Young?
Well, yes. Just this morning, I had another interview with people from Korea and China. And one of the things that's happened is that they've actually become the leaders in the research field on internet addiction, because the problem is more pervasive there than it is in America. And they also have a government-run healthcare system. So there's other factors playing into how quickly and they can develop these kind of clinics. Korea alone has something like 140 internet addiction camps or clinics to try and treat this problem. And when you talk about the deep vein thrombosis, I mean, basically, I've seen young people getting blood clots too here in America. We just don't talk about it as widespread, but because they've been gaming for 15 hours a day, 7 days a week, I'm seeing a lot more with parents calling me saying, "What do I do with my child who's completely addicted to games, and I can't pull them away to even go to school?" And again, it's about maybe that differentiation between, well, what's healthy use, and like a little gaming is fine, but when you get to that point where they drop out of school and they're just doing nothing except wanting to game, that could be a very significant problem.
So the effects are in many ways quite harmful. Who or how does someone know if they are addicted? I mean, someone else who is close to a person can figure it out. You, obviously, as a doctor, can diagnose this. But are there ways that people can recognize the compulsion in themselves?
Well, yes. I mean, certainly at my website at netaddiction.com, I list the criteria that is used to define internet addiction. And I've alluded to some of the definition, where you're talking about people that are preoccupied with their use. They're staying online longer than intended. They're lying and hiding their use. They're getting involved with problems in their relationships, or problems at their job or at school because of their use. They use it as a form of escape, or they go through withdrawal signs. If they're forced to go without it, it becomes a very deep problem for them, or they have physical problems like, we've talked about, eye strain, back strain, carpal tunnel syndrome, and now even things like deep vein thrombosis or blood clots in their legs because they sit there too long. A lot of weight loss because they're not eating right, they're not sleeping well. So those are the kinds of things that oftentimes are triggers signs that somebody might be addicted.
We're talking with Dr. Kimberly Young, a doctor who treats people for internet addiction at a newly opened voluntary 10-day program at the Behavioral Health Services at Bradford Regional Medical Center in central Pennsylvania. You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. We encourage you to share your internet addiction story with us. Dr. Young, when someone checks into your program, you said that for 72 hours they are unplugged. They don't go anywhere near the internet. And I'm wondering if they go through withdrawal as a result of this, much like an alcoholic might go through some kind of DTs after going off of not taking a drink for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's exactly what we do. It's medically supervised. So if there's need for medication or changes in current medication, that's why it's an inpatient stay, and we have physicians overseeing it.
So what? How does that manifest itself? What do people go through?
Well, I mean, withdrawal, it's basically just a lot of times more depression and anxiety, irritability, agitation. You know, it's mostly in emotional states. So what happens is we try to medicate it as needed to get them through that initial period.
And with technologies continuing to evolve, how much worse potentially can the problem of internet addiction get? Because there are more and more ways for now and in the future for people to get addicted, aren't there?
Well, I think you're talking about a lot of the mobile devices and so forth. And what happens is that, you can really consume it at a higher rate because you're constantly on it. And so I think what happens is it's harder to diagnose, you know. And I think the other issue, I mean, we're not just talking about addiction. I mean, a lot of times when I talk about the topic itself, it's really about more of a cultural statement on what, how much technology is too much. You know, when you're talking about the accessibility of it, certainly in the last 4 years, we've seen like mobile computing just explode. And so what's happened is that, you know, it makes it harder to differentiate what's sort of more abusive or misuse or dysfunctional use, as I've talked about. And then it's also looking at how much technology is too much. Where do we start drawing the lines? You know, is it that you need to be constantly connected? Can you go the weekend and just put your phone on the charger and let it go? You know, what's working for each family? You know, I've seen a lot of people, you know, not talking at home anymore because they're constantly on their media devices. And so, you know, it used to be when I was growing up, you know, you could go for a car ride and we actually talked to each other. And now, you know, the kids are in the back playing on their DVD players or have their iPods on. I think that with all this connectivity, we seem less connected to each other.
So do you recommend that people take periodic days off from technology as often as possible?
I think it's helpful if they can. I mean, I try to do that myself, where you don't have to constantly be on this technology in order to feel connected. You can just sit in a room with somebody, play cards, do a lot of other things in terms of your family life. So I do see that there's a big disconnect between what people have been doing, you know, in terms of using this technology, and it's almost become kind of alienating.
And with your program, you mentioned that, you know, the first 4 days are spent completely disconnecting. I want to get into what happens after those first 72 hours. But I do also want to work in a call from Jillian in Pittsburgh, who has a question for you, Dr. Young.
Sure.
Jillian, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
Go ahead with your comment or question.
Okay, thank you. Yes, my question is, have any studies been done with children that might be addicted to television, where it's very convenient for parents to just have the child sit in front of TV? And is, if any work has been done in that area, and it might be quite different from the internet, I understand that.
You mean comparability between internet and television addiction in children?
Well, that too, but also whether children have been impacted by this constant television bombardment without any supervision.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I actually just came back from a fellowship in Sydney, Australia, and they looked at early childhood development and the impact of technology. Now, it didn't specifically single out television versus computers. What I did find interesting about it was they gave, you know, 3-, 4-, 5-year-olds iTablets and were finding out that they were not learning as much as you think they would using the technology. So it's not quite about television viewing, although there are a lot of policies that the pediatric societies say children under 2 shouldn't watch any television, and then even at 3 and 4 be very limited. And I believe that's the same protocol for internet technology. But one of the interesting facts that I learned when I was there in Australia was that when kids are playing on these games, even though they're supposedly educational games, they're really not learning the higher level cognitive skills. They're not learning how to think creatively. Using their creatively. And they're not really learning kind of the logical process. It's more like rote memorization. So what's really happening is that there's a real concern that the technology really isn't teaching them something that it should be.
So after those first 72 hours of going cold turkey, no internet use at all, then what happens at your treatment, in your treatment program for people who volunteer to go through this?
Well, keep in mind, they're always receiving, I mean, since from day one, they receive education, individual therapy, group therapy, family therapy. And then what happens is they move to, you know, a slow reintroduction of the technology. So maybe that fourth day they get 1 hour of internet use that's supervised with a counselor that's kind of going through kind of appropriate modeling what's appropriate use. And then the second day might be, you know, 2 hours, you know, and kind of seeing what they do online. Again, abstaining from the problem behavior, again, maybe gaming, pornography, gambling, something like that, but checking their email, being able to use it. Again, a lot of education on social skill training, since many of them are socially anxious and have poor social skills. Some of it's also looking at self-esteem building, looking at other areas of their life if they do suffer from depression or obsessive compulsive disorder, so they're getting treatment for that as well.
Do people relapse?
Oh, yes. I mean, look, it's like any other addiction. I mean, sometimes I've seen people relapse 20 times in an alcoholism recovery, and they've gone in and out of treatment centers about 10 times. It's not something that I think you just go through the program and boom, you're cured. We don't have anything in our country that deals with addiction on any level quite that universal. So, I mean, this is no different. It's really like any other addiction.
Dr. Kimberly Young is with a newly opened voluntary 10-day program at the Behavioral Health Services at Bradford Regional Medical Center in central Pennsylvania that deals with people who suffer from internet addiction. Dr. Young, thank you so much for spending time with us. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me very much.
Coming up, travel correspondent Elaine LaBalm has ideas on getaway spots across the United States. Places to go during this colder time of year. That's next here on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.